It is so good when we're able to come and take a moment and to delve into the scriptures and to think about what these things mean for us in our lives. It's been interesting watching the American elections as two men vie for power and position. Each of them, with millions of people voting for them, each of them having thousands of people working hard to help to see that they become elected. There's been some uncertainty because of the time it takes to count so many millions of votes. And there has been a little bit of unease, a little bit of rioting, thankfully not too much rioting, some people going to the polling stations, the counting places, and trying to support their preferred person for president. But when we think of Jesus, when we think of how power works in our world, Jesus was just so different. He didn't campaign for support. He didn't stir up the people to vote for him. He didn't whip them into any frenzy. He wasn't seeking high office. And yet we know, following the feeding of the 5,000, and just before our reading today, it tells us that some of them in the crowd wanted to force Jesus to be king. The crowd were really impressed with Jesus. They recognized that he was someone special. In the Old Testament, it said, and the people in the crowd recognized this, Moses had said many, many hundreds, thousands of years before Jesus, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your fellow Israelites. You must listen to him." And so the crowd were right. Jesus was this prophet sent by God. And this should have been a good thing. It could have been a good thing if the crowd were really listening to what Jesus was saying, to hear what he wanted to do. The Jewish people revered Moses, the great prophet, the spokesman of God, the giver of the law. Now, as Christians in our modern culture, we don't revere Moses in the same way that the Jewish people of Jesus' day did. But he was very, very important to them. And it's important for us to see the connections in John's gospel, what John is saying about Jesus and how that links into the life of Moses. Because the Jewish people revered Moses, and John is trying to say something about Jesus to help us understand who Jesus is. And so, as Jay Chol pointed out when he was speaking about the feeding of the 5,000, there's an obvious link between the people of Israel in the desert and Moses praying and the manna coming and feeding the people in the desert, and Jesus coming with the loaves and the fishes and praying and feeding the 5,000. There's this sort of connection between Jesus and Moses that John wants us to see. An echo of the Old Testament stories of Moses is also found in the discussion with the woman at the well. And Jesus spoke of himself giving living water. And he says, "Whoever believes in me, as the scriptures have said, rivers of living water will flow from within them." And so there's this connection. You'll remember Moses in the desert with the people brought water from the rock. And that sustained them, quenched their thirst. But Jesus is saying, "I am the living water. I'm the living water." And then in the story we're looking at today, we also find in Moses' life, he led the people of Israel through the Red Sea on dry land. Jesus, we find, walks on the water itself. So we looked at this earlier in the year in our series Greater Than. We found in Hebrews that Jesus is greater than Moses. This is what John is trying to help the people he was writing for to see and to understand. Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, we read in Hebrews. And then if we follow on in that reading, it says, Moses was a faithful servant in the house of God, but Jesus is the faithful son over the house of God. And it adds a richer, fuller understanding to the story when we realize this is helping Jewish people who revered Moses to see that Jesus is greater than Moses. And so as we read, Jesus, knowing they intended to make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. Jesus had just won the popular vote. The crowd were on his side, but they misunderstood him. They wanted to force him to become their worldly king, their powerful provider, their president. They wanted Jesus to be their king on their terms, right there, right then. But this would have been a worldly political power play against Herod and against the Romans. Who knows, with 5,000 in the crowd whipped up, maybe they could go and take the fort of Herod or beat some of the Romans. But this would have been forcing Jesus to use his power and a heavenly show of power, a show of force. And he knew the crowd needed to calm down and to rethink, to listen to what he was really saying. So Jesus diffused the situation by sending his disciples to the other side of the lake. He got them out of the way of what was going on here, and he himself retreated to a quiet place. And notice at the very end of the reading, the crowd is still looking for him. The crowd comes back in the morning. They're still quite interested in finding him. So today we come to this fifth sign in John's Gospel where Jesus walks on water. Oh, that one. And I wonder how this story strikes you. What do you think when you read it, or as Chi did read it here being read to us? Very familiar story, but what questions does it raise for you? What challenges does it bring to your mind? I think this is a slightly strange story. I say strange because in the other signs that Jesus is doing, it's obvious that he's using his power to help other people. So at the wedding in Cana, he turns the water into wine. This benefits the couple who are being married. He heals the official son. This helps the whole family, helps the son, the family who were concerned for the boy. Feeds the 5,000. This benefits 5,000 and the others who were there. They were hungry. They are fed. But what's happening on the lake? Who's benefiting by Jesus walking on the water? Is he being self-indulgent? Is he just, I'll use my power and take a shortcut, doing this for his own benefit? Well, you have to think about this one a little bit more, because it's not as obvious as the others, which is why I say it just seems a little strange, but it isn't really. Who benefits here are the disciples who see what happens, who see the miraculous sign, who have an opportunity to grow in their faith. And we also benefit, our faith being able to grow and be stretched as we see what Jesus has done. Now, here at Greyfriars, we think in some ways of the signs of a healthy church. And one of them we know is to grow in faith. And sometimes we grow in faith. Sometimes the disciples grew in faith when they were actually on their own and having to do something Jesus had asked them to do and finding it in some way difficult or stretching or demanding. And keep that in mind as we think about this. There are two other things to keep in mind. One is the wider sense in which we also find this story in Matthew's gospel, in Mark's gospel. Luke doesn't tell us about it at all. And in Matthew, Mark, and John, they're all slightly different, reflecting the author's priorities. I'd really like to sort of delve into that a bit, but we don't have time today. But the account in John's gospel is really sort of quite condensed. He wants to just get to the heart of the subject straight away. And the second thing to note is the immediate context. It's not a story in isolation. The 5,000 have been fed. Jesus is about to talk about being the bread of life. And in the middle, he's showing his disciples something more of his power and an important way that's going to really help them. So just sort of keep those things in mind as you consider this story. So we have the disciples, they're in the boat, they're rowing against the wind, they're not making much progress. They're only doing what Jesus told them to do. Matthew gives us the detail, John doesn't. We read in Matthew, immediately Jesus made the disciples get into the boat. He saw the situation developing with the crowd, the kingship thing. He made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side of the lake while he dismissed the crowd. So think of this. The disciples were only doing what Jesus told them to do. They were doing exactly what Jesus told them to do. They got into the boat, they were heading to the other side, and they were rowing. They were doing what he had asked. But the wind was blowing, the waters grew rough, the storm brewing, if not already upon them. In some ways, it might have been quicker to walk around the edge of the lake than to row across it. They're working hard, they're getting nowhere. Does this sound a bit like your life at times? Working hard, not getting exactly where you want to be. You're doing what Jesus has asked, but you're struggling. You're seeking to follow Jesus, but it's hard work. Sometimes it's even costly. Perhaps you're rowing and you're rowing, but you're not making a lot of headway. Instead of the word rowing, put in the word prayer. You're praying, just like Jesus commanded. You're praying and you're praying, you're not making headway. Or praising God and praising God. But it feels like a struggle. Or reading the Bible, or serving God, or being faithful. Some of these things, maybe something else in your life, you're rowing and you're rowing and you're rowing, but you don't seem to be getting very far with this. None of these things are wrong. You're doing your best. You're just not making the progress you had hoped for. And if you pause for a moment here and think about what that rowing might represent in your life, all the things that are going on around you. You might feel you're not making headway. You might feel you're losing ground. Perhaps the winds of financial hardship are blowing on you. Perhaps there's some strong gusts blowing among your family relationships. Maybe your business or your employment is an uphill struggle for you. Maybe, and for many people today, maybe the things that are happening with COVID, we feel worried about things, we're anxious about our health, we're weary about possible lockdowns. We've just heard Ashley tell us to get on with it if we want to be at level one, make sure you sign into places. And it could be that in your spirit, you're feeling tired, you're feeling tossed around by the storms of life. You perhaps like the disciples out there rowing, rowing, rowing. Did Jesus really tell us to do this? Is this really what he wants us to be doing? And perhaps you're like them and you're wondering, well, where is Jesus when you need him? A couple of weeks ago, I was feeling a little bit despondent. My daily devotion took me to a verse in the Proverbs. It's a verse that I turn to from time to time. It says this, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick." Hope deferred makes the heart sick. If you've been hoping for something and it doesn't happen, well, maybe that's all right, but if you keep hoping and it still doesn't happen, and you keep hoping and it still doesn't happen, something goes on inside us, doesn't it? We sort of struggle with these things. And sometimes it can really make us feel down and depressed and anxious and even sort of sick in soul and in spirit because our hopes aren't being met. It reminded me of an old song that we used to sing in a previous parish, asking God, How long before you drench the barren land? How long before we see your righteous hand? How long before your name is lifted high? How long before the weeping turns to songs of joy? And at that, on that day, at that moment, I had this aching, this longing to see God's hand at work in many ways. And I know that many of us will share this, the desire to see revival and renewal sweep our nation, to see people turn to him in faith and repentance. And ringing in my heart and my mind was this question, how long, Lord? How long? How long is this going to be? And then later that morning, I came into the office. I was working away about 11 or half 11. I checked my emails. I've been getting a daily prayer email. It's a 40-day course. And when I looked at the heading on this email in big letters, it said, how long? And I just put my head in my hands and wept. Because it seemed to me that having prayed and at home, I'd written in my prayer diary, I'd found this song, how long, I'd got it out, I'd sung it to the Lord, I'd prayed, how long, and then when I get to work, out of my email pops this question, how long? It's as if God was saying to me, John, I'm there with you. I see what's happening. I'm by your side. I'm aware that you're struggling with these things. As the disciples rode and rode, then Jesus appeared to them, coming in the distance. And in Matthew, it tells us the disciples were on the lake. They were terrified when they saw him walking towards them. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. Now, why ghost? Well, everybody knows you don't walk on water. If you're in the middle of the lake and you see something walking towards you, obviously can't be a human being, because that just doesn't work. And so they were afraid. Maybe it's a specter, an apparition of some sort coming towards them. And they were frightened. Well, what frightens you? What frightens you? I remember when I was about 9, my uncle pranked us one night. It was dark at night. My brother and I were going to bed, but the blinds weren't pulled down at the window. My uncle had come around, and he came up to the window, banged his hands against it, put his face against it. Look around, you see the bang, our face. Now, scared the life out of me. And he thought it was a great joke. But that scared me so much, I tell you about it today, because I still remember that. But Jesus comes, and he speaks words of comfort to the disciples. It's I. Don't be afraid. Jesus brings peace. Jesus brings comfort. To the disciples, when they were on the Mount of Transfiguration and afraid, Jesus said, don't be afraid. To Jairus, who was concerned his little daughter was dying, Jesus said, don't be afraid. To the women at the tomb who were confused and wondering what was going on, he said to them, do not be afraid. Perhaps in the most well-known of these verses, he said to his disciples, peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. And do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Perhaps these are the words you need to hear from Jesus today. In an uncertain world with COVID, with all the turmoil, with the heightened anxiety, with many needing to hear something from the Lord. Peace, peace, comfort. Do not be afraid. Now, I'm not suggesting COVID isn't serious, but what I am saying is that when you know the Lord, that Jesus can calm our fears, even in storms like that. And then further we read, they were willing, once they knew who it was, they were willing to take him into the boat. And so I ask, have you allowed Jesus into the boat of your life? Do you have Jesus as your companion? Have you welcomed him as he is, his timing, his way? See, the difference between the crowds and the disciples welcome Jesus into the boat. The crowds want to force him to be king. But Jesus would never be the type of king the crowd wanted. He would never sit on a throne they provided or perform the miracles they desired. But there's also a second part to this miracle. Once they knew who it was, they were willing to take him onto the boat, and notice immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. Rowing, rowing, getting nowhere. Rowing, rowing, getting nowhere. Jesus gets into the boat, you're there. In a sense, whenever Jesus gets into the boat with us, we're there. Having Jesus with us is so important. Now step back and think for a moment about what John is telling us there. The crowd wanted to make Jesus king. Jesus didn't want to be king on their terms. The reality of the situation unknown to the crowds, Jesus already was king. He was the king of kings. He didn't need them to make him king. And his mission on earth was not to sit on a throne, but to hang on a cross. His mission was not merely to save the 5,000 who wanted him to be their king, but to offer salvation to all who would call upon his name. And we have a faithful saint in Irene who said to us today, how many years, Irene? 70 years since she became a Christian. 70 years with Jesus in the boat. 70 years of knowing Jesus through good times and hard times. 70 years of knowing Jesus' faithfulness, so that Irene still comes this morning, still comes to join the family of God, still comes to sing God's praise, still comes to share God's love. This is what happens when Jesus is in the boat with us. You know, the disciples went ahead of him on the boat. They struggled without him. That wasn't a punishment for them. That wasn't a trick. Jesus wasn't making them struggle for no reason at all. Rowing hard, getting nowhere. Sometimes that's a picture of my life. Sometimes it's a picture of your life. Sometimes it's a picture of the life of the church. Jesus sometimes allows us to face difficulties, not to swamp us, but to help us grow, to see who he really is, to allow our faith to be stretched. There are times when Jesus just doesn't seem as if he's near. Times when we ask, how long? Times when we wonder, where are you, Lord? Sometimes we think of this as the dark night of the soul. Or other times you might speak of it as a desert experience when we feel alone. As the psalmist wrote, my tears have been my food all day and night. And sometimes we go into that sort of situation where things are so difficult, where we're crying, where we're sobbing, where it feels like we're almost drinking, swallowing our tears. They're just flowing so much. Many of us know what it is to be distraught in that way. And recently, when I asked God, how long? God's response wasn't to change my circumstances. It wasn't to remove the challenges. But it was just like he was saying to me, John, I'm in the boat. John, I'm by your side. John, I hear your prayer. I'm always with you, even to the end of the age. Walking on water reveals Jesus' power over creation. And this sign, for the benefit of the disciples who see it, they begin to understand he may not be king in the way the crowds want, but this man has power. And when he begins to talk about being the bread of life, understanding who Jesus is will help these disciples. Jesus is revealing his indescribable power, more power than any human crowd or army to claim a worldly throne. Jesus, so powerful, he could not only walk on water, he could bring them to the safety of their destination without even lifting a finger. Jesus, more powerful than any king, he was and he is God, and he is able to do things, including this walking on water. Well, what difference does this make to us? If someone's going to let the kids in the youth group know it's almost time for communion, that's a good time to do it. What difference does this make to us? So the sign wasn't self-indulgent when Jesus walked on water. It's a revelation of his power. He sent the disciples away to put a bit of distance between them and the crowds who wanted to force him to be king. In the midst of their struggles then, as they're struggling, he reveals his wonderful power to them and he brings them to their destination. And you might be wondering, as sometimes I wonder, why, Lord? Why do you allow this? Why do you allow that? This story reminds us Jesus knows what is best. Jesus cares for us. Jesus is at work. There's a modern song that says of the Lord, even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. You never stop. You never stop working. And at this moment in your life, you may not see it, but Jesus is working. And you may not hear it, but Jesus is working. And you may not see it, but Jesus is working. And you may not sense it, but Jesus is working. It's like the psalmist wrote, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And I want you today to take some comfort from that and to draw some strength from that, because Jesus is near to you. Perhaps today, take a moment to reflect, put down the oars. Focus on Jesus rather than the storm. Remember the great power of the king who's in the boat with you. Or there's another story. Even if he's asleep in the boat while the storm rages, you're still held in the love of the King of Glory. You're still empowered by the presence of the Holy Spirit. And I also want to say, if you haven't accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior, if you haven't allowed him into the boat, now's a great time to do that. Particularly as we come to the communion and we think about his life, his death, his resurrection, the body, the blood poured out for us so that we could be forgiven. And so this is the time to do that business of salvation. Or even maybe it's time for some of us to rededicate ourselves. Maybe some of us have allowed some of the blinkers of the difficulty to come over our hearts and our lives. And we need to just remember, Jesus is close to us, and so again, Lord, I'm going to take your hand. Again, Lord, I'm going to walk with you. But if you do allow Jesus into your life for the first time today, then speak to me, let me know, or Jay Chol, let Jay Chol know, or a Christian friend, so that we can encourage you as you encourage us.